When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Inspirational women are increasingly popular in the news and media, but many go unheard and their stories are never told. Women to Watch with Susan Rocco captures the stories of many women who truly make a difference. Women to Watch is the vehicle for developing new leaders, encouraging younger generations, and in building self-esteem for future entrepreneurs.
Here we are in our own little studio. I'm so excited to be sitting this afternoon with Cynthia Germanotta. We are in New York at 30 Rockefeller Center to celebrate and learn more about the Share Kindness Foundation. And I feel very honored to be sitting here with you today because I think your intention to make a difference in the world for young people is extremely important, and the more people that are doing that, the better. So I welcome you to Women to Watch.
Thank you. I'm very honored to be here and excited to have the opportunity to talk more about our work.
And of course, as we always do on Women to Watch, my show is really about you, my guest, and you happen to be the mother of Lady Gaga, and we can't do an interview without stating that right off the bat. But I'm very interested in you and your life and where you came from that kind of was the beginning of everything, you know, your family and the raising of your two daughters. So I thought we would start with your growing up years in West Virginia. And just tell me a little bit about your family and what it was like those early years.
Sure. I was born and raised in West Virginia in a very small town called McMeekin. It was 1,700 people. And it's
small.
South of Wheeling and maybe 50 miles from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
So more people might understand geographically where it is. It's called the Ohio Valley. So very small town, very simple life, you know, at that time. It was in the middle 50s, you know, when I was born.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a brother and a sister, and, you know, my mother and father, we lived in it. It was a very small house, actually right on the Ohio River. And had the kind of childhood, really, that was simple, but we were exposed to things, you know, in spite of some of the limitations that my family had, because neither my mother or father came from, you know, they had a simple background,
mm-hmm.
I should say,
okay.
and education-wise as well. I mean, both my husband and I were the first to really, you know, graduate from college.
Okay.
Yeah, so we had a simple life. It was the type of thing where, you know, everybody's neighbors and friends and, you know, says hello. And
right.
I did basic things that any child would do, very traditional upbringing. But I will say, with the exception of music and creativity and dance, which was very strong in our family, and it was a multi-generational thing. So, you know, my father had a tremendous voice, and he studied voice for years, was a local performer. The same with my brother. My sister got involved. I studied dance from a very, very early age that I continued through college and beyond, even in New York when I came here to study. So there was a musical component and a lot of creativity that my parents fostered and enabled us to do.
So it's clearly in the DNA and in the family, and, you know, has continued
Yes, it's actually, and it's in the DNA on both sides, I would say. My husband studied piano. He was in a band, you know, played guitar. His sister, who passed, unfortunately, at a very early age, but she was a very, very creative artist, both as a writer, painter, you know, drawer. Mm-hmm. So both sides, there was an element, but as I say, it came out in this particular generation for whatever reason.
Yeah, it's a wonderful gift, I think, for any person to have music or creativity, art in, you know, as a gift, because it's something you can carry with you, you know, till forever. You know, it's not one of those things that you have to stop doing as you age, you know.
Well, true, and I think, you know, I feel that many people look at some of the performing arts as a hobby when they're young, but whether you pursue it or not, you carry so many things with you throughout your life. There's a lot of discipline associated with it, mm-hmm. You know, learning, branching out your mind. So I think it's wonderful whether you pursue it or not.
Yeah, exactly.
And I'm a huge advocate of having performing arts programs in schools.
Right, yeah, absolutely. I read that you've said that your mentality as a family is to be strong. And I wanted to know where that strength in you came from. And you talk about, you know, kind of a simple upbringing. But I always feel that, you know, we all have different levels of resilience and strength. And a lot of times they're shaped by our life circumstance.
Right.
Can you pinpoint something about your life or upbringing that really helped to shape the strength that not only you have, but you've passed on to your daughters?
I definitely can, and I have to say that it came from my parents, and I would say the same for my husband. They worked extremely hard because they loved it and because they wanted to provide as good of a life as possible, you know, for their children. But that was very inspirational to us, you know, to watch it and to see it. And we, too, became that way, you know. So it's, you know, if I think about my mother in particular, she had a lot of struggles and sacrifices at a very, very early age, starting as young as the age of 11 years old. And just through, like, true grit and faith and perseverance, she made it. And as did my father. And then when they came together, they created, you know, something great. And they had a very strong fabric in spite of the obstacles that they faced. And, I talk a lot about, in everyone's life, you come to a fork in the road. You know, we all have a situation where you could take a good path or you could go down a bad path. Mm-hmm. And they went down, you know, a path that ended up being good for them. Mm-hmm. And we saw a lot of that happen. So that to us, I think that really made us strong, you know, and gave us a lot of faith in our abilities to also achieve. Now it happened in a different way because I ended up, you know, I went to school at West Virginia University, graduated there. I went on to graduate school and got my master's at GW and then came to New York. But you continue, you know, with those values and still that perseverance and strength. And we carried that through with our children and hopefully have instilled that in them.
Yeah. We like to say we come from good stock.
Good stock.
Yeah, that's exactly what the Irish say.
Okay. That's what the Italians say,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, see? There you go. Well, in, you know, speaking of that, I wanted to know if they're raising Stephanie and Natalie as a mom, was there a mantra? Because I find, you know, as mothers, there's some, your kids will say, my mom always said, you know, A, B, C, D, or E. Was there a mantra for you with the girls that they would say, mom always said this?
Well, in her song, Born This Way, she said, my mama always said, you know, said we were all born superstars. So what that really translates into is that I often told them to believe in their abilities, mm-hmm. you know, and to follow their passions.
Right.
So I would say if there was any mantra that, you know, that was maybe it, to believe in yourself be kind and be compassionate.
Right, right.
And I would say the other was one day at a time. You know, because when you're young, there's a need to very quickly want things to
yes.
happen. And life is not like that.
That's right.
And, you know, I think everybody gets frustrated, but in particular, young people. Success doesn't happen overnight, no matter what field you're in.
Yeah.
So I would often say to them, one day at a time, you know, keep your head down, stay focused on the path, and just one day at a time.
I think that's such an important message, because in today's world in particular, where we are able to do things so incredibly quickly, it makes us impatient. You know,
Very much so, yes.
You know, the technology and the internet allows us to do things, checking off lists, and, you know, that's a whole other issue about young people today. They really have grown up in an era where it's hard to be patient.
Right, and it's hard to they don't find the time to just sit and reflect, plan. You know, about their future. So I agree with you, and I hope we can figure out a way to have young people take a pause and,
yeah.
and do that.
Yeah. Well, we're having the conversations. I think that's the first step, always awareness.
Yes.
Right? I saw in an interview with Oprah that you said to her, she asked you about, you know, parenting, and these are some of the things I think with regard to the foundation, we're trying to help young people, and we want to say the right things, because they typically will go to their peers for advice over, you know, adults. And you said, you know, be more, if you have a child that's going through a difficult time emotionally, be more aware and insert yourself into your child's life. And I wondered, how do we do that without being intrusive? There's a fine line.
I was just going to say it's a very delicate balance. And, you know, I struggled with that, quite frankly. And I think I still do. Of trying to determine when to jump in, you know, when maybe something has gone too far, how to tell the difference when a teenager is going through just normal biological growth mm-hmm. and maybe having a serious neurological issue
mm-hmm.
or, you know, some health or mental health issues. So I've struggled with that. So I think part of it is better education on the part of the parent, and I feel also working in tandem with the schools. We care a great deal at our foundation, at Born This Way Foundation, about something called social-emotional learning. And it's basically a whole discipline around understanding and regulating your emotions and your feelings. And it's something that you can actually learn. And I think with schools playing a part in that, with parents keeping a watchful eye at home and then communicating, you can catch things mm-hmm. you might not normally catch mm-hmm. on your own. And I know I made lots of mistakes. I used to tell my kids, look, I didn't get a manual with you.
They
and
sent us home in the hospital.
They sent us
nothing.
Home with a couple of diapers.
Right.
So
right.
please be patient. I am going to make mistakes, you
right.
know, and we did our best. And, you know, one thing we did as a family is we had family meals 7 days a week together. Mostly home cooked. I mean,
that's a
yeah.
tremendous thing you did. That's the best thing you could have
yeah.
done.
I mean,
yeah.
there might have been a pizza night or there might have been a Chinese food night, but basically we cooked. But the reason I bring that up is it gave us some time to actually talk mm-hmm. and find out how their day was. We would occasionally role play some situations if they were in trouble. But once they go back to school, you don't really know what's going to happen. And that's mm-hmm. why I make the point about, I feel that the home, the parent, the community, even their extracurricular activities, have to work in tandem.
Yes,
to
right.
help young people.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. The foundation you know, talks a lot about bullying. You know, that's something that's very much in the news and very much a topic of conversation. When I think about my own, you know, upbringing, I think we were so free as children. We kind of ran around the neighborhood. Nobody was watching us. Right?
Same with me.
Right? Yeah. It's so different
playing
today.
Playing tag, climbing trees, whatever.
It was all imagination. We had no, you know, gadgets,
right.
Tools. We didn't. And, I miss that. I think it was a wonderful way to grow up. But so we were certainly kind of out there on our own. And there were moments where, you know, other kids were not so nice to myself, my friends, my brothers. And they do stay, those moments stay with you. Was there a time that you were bullied that you remember that stays with you?
Me personally?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yes, for sure.
Any one particular that was just really, you know?
There were times I was taunted about my appearance. And that's a very interesting question because it ties to some research that we've done that the number one reason that young people are bullied is for appearance. And I just kind of connected the dots. And, you know, even though we didn't have a lot, you know, I was allowed to buy clothes twice a year. And I really treasured those.
Mm-hmm.
And I liked to look nice.
Mm-hmm.
So I would sometimes get taunted for that, sometimes get taunted for, like, my nose or something. And it was hurtful.
Whatever's different about that person.
Mm-hmm. And I danced, so I wasn't always involved in extracurricular activities at school. I would do my studies and leave and go to dancing school. So I was a bit different myself. So, yes, I experienced it. The difference, though, is I could go home and escape it. Now it follows you everywhere.
That's right.
You know, you have social media. It follows you at home on social media. It's you really can't escape it. It's not as easy as when we were growing up.
It's true. It's over. I feel bad for kids growing up in today's world for that reason. It's overwhelming.
It's overwhelming, and there's so many places where cruelness and mean acts can happen.
Right.
And sometimes they're anonymous, which must be even worse because you don't know where or why.
Right.
That's coming from.
That's right. One of the things that the foundation has done is partnered with Yale and their, is it the Institute for Emotional Quotient, EQ Center?
Yes, it's the Center for Social Emotional Learning.
Yes.
For Emotional Intelligence.
I think I'm fascinated with the whole topic of EQ because I think that young people in particular need to know how important their EQ is versus their IQ, intellectual quotient, that when you have the empathy and the ability to connect with people, that can lead to more personal and professional success than an IQ ever, right? Tell me about this partnership.
Absolutely.
So the
partnership a couple of years ago was around creating a summit for must have been some 400 young people, parents, teachers, you know, educators. We all came together to discuss this concept of social emotional learning and standardizing that, I would say, in schools. I mean, rightfully so, schools focus on what they call STEM, science, technology, engineering and math,
right.
Which are vitally important.
We need more girls going into STEM.
We definitely do.
We do. Yep.
But I talk about putting the STEAM in STEM. So that would be the other E, which is the emotional intelligence, you know, part of it.
Yeah.
These are lifelong skills that, you know, help people get along better. It's proven that young people, they perform better in school. There are reduced instances of anxiety and other issues having gone through social emotional learning and training, and there's increased success. They perform better on tests, so it's really a vital skill that has kind of fallen by the wayside. And there's a lot greater spotlight on it right now, which I'm very, very happy to see. There's a number of curriculum out there to choose from, but I would really love to see it become a standard. Put that STEAM in STEM.
It should,
and
yes.
have it become a standard course.
Yes, and yes, there's never been enough emphasis on it, the importance of it, and it's critical for
very much
for
so.
Just, you know, well-being, right?
Yes.
One of the things when I was reading about the Institute and what they're doing, one of the things you learned, I think, that young people prefer receiving mental health services online via texting. And I thought to myself, that's the way we have to reach them, but does that defeat the purpose of teaching young people to connect on a human level? And how, you know, I'm conflicted about that, I guess.
I am as well. It's a complicated issue, but what we did find that I think is encouraging is that it's age-based. So at our foundation, at Born This Way, we do research. We also partner with organizations that conduct research. And what we learned is that the younger that children are, they prefer to text. As they get older, they are more inclined to either call a hotline, you know, actually dial and speak to a person, or sit down one-on-one, perhaps in a therapy situation or what have you. So there is, you know, hope that the older they get, that you will have that one-on-one interaction.
Right.
It's something that I loved a great deal about my daughter's school, where they, you know, grew up, spent K through 12, really, in this school, is that when young people had an issue, they kind of brokered them sitting down together and talking it out. And to this day, that's a skill that both of them have, is they don't like an issue to fester with mm-hmm. a friend or with me or with their father. They want to hash it out and move on. And I think that's a great skill, because when you bottle things up, mm-hmm. you know, when it is anonymous, as you say, you can misread texts and everything.
There's no tone.
There is no tone at all to it, so you can really misinterpret it. So I don't, and I say a lot that kids live online, but love and support doesn't. So I feel that the personal element of looking someone in the eye mm. and talking and knowing that you're valued and somebody cares about you is irreplaceable.
Yeah.
And we advocate for better access to those types of services for young people, you know, in schools and in their communities.
Right. You know, when I think about you as a mom to, I'll say, Lady Gaga, and she's clearly a sensitive soul, you know, on this earth. It's hard for parents when their kids go out into the world and you know, they're sad or someone says something that's not nice. So you have this daughter that's really given herself to the world through her creativities and her gifts. How I'm wondering what your own coping mechanism is to not worry so much. You know, when you're lying in bed at night and you're thinking about her putting herself out there and how hard it is for her.
I haven't cracked the code on that.
Okay.
I will tell you, I have not. I guess it's once a mom, always a mom,
right.
No matter what the age of your child.
Yeah.
You know, I'm trying to get better at it.
Yeah.
But it is difficult. And I think the older your children get, they need you more emotionally. And especially kind of at the level that she's at.
Right. It's amplified.
It's amplified.
It's so amplified. Yeah.
You need someone to talk to. So my coping mechanism, I try to do some self-care for myself, you know, whether that's working out or... Mm-hmm. But I think the best thing, and I have had to turn to, you know, to therapy before and talking to someone myself.
Yeah.
I think when parents are in that situation, it's helpful to maybe find a safe environment with a trusted confidant that you can talk it through with.
Mm-hmm.
And I go back to, if you bottle it up, it starts to affect you. But, you know, as moms, we want to solve our kids' problems for them.
Yeah.
And that's been maybe the most difficult thing for me to let go of.
Right.
Is that we can't always do that for
them.
Right. They won't grow, they don't mature, and so I'm really, that's been something that I've worked on.
Yeah, we continue to work on it.
We continue to.
I guess you can never live in this world without worry.
We can't.
We can't.
So if I crack the code,
let me
I'll let you know.
And if I do, vice versa.
Exactly.
I will. I've been working on it. So another thing that we talk about a lot on this show, because it's, again, women that are working hard and out there trying, we're always trying to save the world. Women do that, right? The topic of finding balance. And I think we've all come to know that it's really silly. There is no balance, really, in your day. I think it's more about learning to, as we were talking about before the interview started, you know, when things take a turn, to be able to pivot, right?
Right.
But finding balance is something that's important, and I think we should try to do as working women. What, when we use that word, that term, tell me how you apply it to your day-to-day with everything that you're doing. What brings you a sense of balance?
This, I have to say, over the years, particularly since I started working with my daughter on the foundation, is realizing that balance, that I don't have two lives. I don't have a personal life and a professional life. They're really one and the same. And I wish that more people would view it that way. And so I think for them to come together, you have to be happy in both of those environments.
Right.
So
yeah.
If you have a, whether it's a career or whatever you're doing, that you feel good about, that you're happy about, and try to find happiness in your personal life, whether that's spiritually or your family, mm-hmm. That to me is balance.
Yeah. Keep being able to bring together your professional and personal lives and make sure that it's all kind of moving in sync, I guess.
Right, that
yeah,
it's in
that
sync
is, makes
and
sense.
That you find joy and happiness in that and what you're doing.
Yeah. I think we're almost out of time, so I just want to give you an opportunity to share anything about the foundation that you would like our listeners to know, any of the initiatives that you're working on that you would want people to learn?
Thank you. I would love them to know. And briefly, I can share that, you know, our mission is, we come at it from building a generation that is kinder and braver. The brave part, when my daughter first mentioned this to me, I didn't quite understand what she meant by bravery. But what she meant was having the skill set to really deal with the struggles that you're having. Mm. So the way that we incorporate that into our work is by focusing on three areas. One is awareness around kindness and engaging young people in acts of kindness. The second is creating positive climates for them. And social-emotional learning is one area we focus. And that's positive climates, whether it's at school, home, in your communities. And then the third area is their mental wellness.
Right.
I call it wellness of mind and wellness of body. So all of our programs are actually focused around that. I'll speak very briefly to the hashtag ShareKindness partnership that we have with NBC this month, which we are so grateful for.
It's wonderful.
It's a beautiful experience. We're actually in a physical space at 30 Rockefeller Center, right near the plaza and the holiday tree.
Right, yeah,
and,
it's beautiful.
And it's, think of it as a curated journey where the public can come in and participate in acts of kindness and choose things to do. And we believe very much in partnering with other organizations so that we can all scale our work and help young people. So we've partnered with Kids Food Basket, who provides some 7,000 meals to children in need. And you can decorate a lunch bag.
Yeah,
you know,
we
for
saw
them.
That downstairs. It's so great. It's so great.
A company called Minted donated 20,000 cards to us. So you can write a card to a child who might be in the hospital during the holidays, a veteran or a military, you know, hero who is deployed, who won't be home for the holidays. So you can kind of curate through these different acts of kindness and take
it
a pause
teaching
and experience.
Isn't it? Yeah, to walk through that exhibit with your child, I think is such a teachable moment.
Very teachable moment.
Yeah.
So that's, we would love, you know, it's here through December the 23rd.
Okay.
That's one example. We've done some work in the area of online harassment. Seven out of 10 young people are harassed online.
Mm.
And so we've been working very hard on reducing the frequency and severity of that. So there's a number of initiatives. We've partnered with Mattel as well around kindness and positive school climates. It's kindness.edu.
Okay.
So we're very big on partnering so that we can all scale. Helping young people is far greater than one individual.
Yeah.
It's far greater than Born This Way Foundation, far greater than my, you know, all my daughter's followers. So we really need to partner with other like-minded organizations.
Yeah.
So, and we thank NBC for that.
Yeah. Well, Liz, I thank you so much.
I thank you so much
for sitting with me today. I really appreciate it.
And thank you.
We'll be sure to spread the word to all of our listeners and let them know what you're doing.
Thank you.
It's
and we're at BornThisWay.Foundation.
BornThisWay.Foundation.
Right.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you so much.